Hello and welcome to another episode of The Song of the Mountain, a podcast where we talk about stories and how some of the magic of the stories we love can find their way into our real lives. Today, we're going to be taking the next step in our journey to discover the second thing your life needs to become a story. So, let's dive in. All right, everybody, welcome back. Thank you for joining. I'm back with the next installment of this four-part series. We took an extraordinarily long break. If you haven't listened to it recently, go ahead and give those other episodes a listen and have a refresh. Just as a quick recap, though, here, what we're talking about are the four things your life needs to become a story. Many of us absorb, love, listen to stories, but then we just go back to our real lives basically no different, or maybe just influenced by the story, but just the thing we loved in the story somehow doesn't travel over the Bifrost, over this magical, mythical bridge into our real lives. And that's tragic. It is tragic because the purpose of those stories is to help draw us into a better life, draw us into new ways of being and seeing our lives. And the things we love about those stories, we kind of love sometimes at a distance, but we don't sit down and go, wait a second, what is it in this story I love? And what does that mean about what I want from my life right now? So the four things we talked about are, one, you have to get out of Act One. Right? So the beginning of Act One in a story is where the protagonist is in the loop of normal life. They're going around in circles. Nothing's really happening. They aren't growing. They're not changing. They're disconnected from themselves, usually. They're just staying safe. And then the inciting event happens, kicks them out of Act One, and then the story starts. Then the next thing we mentioned, and the thing we're going to be covering today, is finding your genius, finding that unique creative ability or a set of abilities you have inside of you. So let's dive in. So first of all, when I say finding your genius, that might sound like a pretty ostentatious or arrogant thing to say for some of you. A genius? Like, I'm not a genius. No, the geniuses are out there, which is an interesting thing to think about, because if we all believe that, then where are the geniuses? Right? So it's just a perspective thing. We just have this bias to think that we're not the geniuses, someone else is. So genius. So what do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is there is this thing inside of you that you do, this way of doing things that is effortless, that you don't have to think about, that you do naturally and intuitively. When you do it, you sort of lose a sense of time. You enter a state psychologists call flow. It's sort of this euphoric experience, and it only happens in certain circumstances. Now, we're not going to go into flow. That would be a whole other podcast episode, but suffice it to say there's a strong connection between genius and flow. But the bottom line is you have it. Every single human being on this earth was imbued with some kind of creative genius, and they may or may not know what it is. The reason why that is the second thing we're talking about in how your life becomes a story is that is one of the biggest things that changes for the protagonist in a story once they get out of Act One. See, in many ways, Act One, before the so-called inciting event happens, could be characterized by a life not committed to genius. It's a life that is committed to safety. It is a life that is not committed to the wild, unpredictable, and uncontrollable nature of your creative genius. It is committed to the reproducible, controllable thing that we've always done to get praise and promotions. But that is different than genius. Okay? So you take like Luke Skywalker, for example. Yeah, he was a farmer. He was probably a okay farmer. He was pretty good at it. But his genius was far different. His genius maybe was tied into him knowing the Force, and learning how to control this sort of strange, mysterious cosmic power. And see, this is why those stories really resonate with us, is because they're giving this magical or mystical dimension to our real lives that we don't see with our two eyes, right? Like Luke Skywalker learning to wield the Force sounds like unrealistic, but it is no different, I would argue, than you discovering your own creative genius. It is no less magical. It is no less powerful and out there than your own journey. And that's why it resonates. But what's interesting is it's only when you get out of Act One that your genius really starts to come online. So let's talk about genius. The way to understand it, first, actually, before we go into that, I need to give a lot of credit where it's due to Gay and Katie Hendricks. In particular, Gay Hendricks wrote a number of books on this idea of genius. And a lot of what I'm going to be talking about today comes from that. He's done some amazing work there. Highly recommend his books on discovering your genius. Just Google Gay Hendricks genius books and you'll find a couple in there. They're amazing. Okay. All right. So let's just take a broad look though on genius. But we're not going to look directly at genius because you have to understand the difference between genius and the other things that you do in your life. That's in some ways the way to understand it, is in contrast to other abilities you have. So we're going to look at are these four quadrants of competencies, you might say, okay? The first is the sphere of incompetence. These are things we are no good at, they frustrate us, and they drain us significantly, okay? The second quadrant is the sphere of competence. You do this about as well as most people. So incompetence is most people do this a lot better than you. Competence is you do this about as well as most people. Excellence is the next sphere. And this is the one we really are going to focus on because this is where most people get trapped. You do this better than most people. You're actually really good at the things in your sphere of excellence. But there's a huge difference between that and your sphere of genius. Genius, which we talked about before, has this sense of effortlessness to it. It has this sense of intuition about it. There's a sense of joy, the sense of flow. Okay, so incompetence, competence, excellence, and genius. Let's go into each of those now that you kind of get a sense for the four quadrants. So incompetence. Let me give some examples. Directions for me, right? That is definitely a sphere of incompetence for me. I do not have a sense of direction. Most people do that better than me. If I didn't have my GPS, I would be pretty lost. And for whatever reason, directions are something that is kind of in my sphere of incompetence. Okay. So the way to think about for you is, what are those things that you persist in doing that most people do better than you, that are frustrating, that feel like a ton of work with very little output? So that's one thing I want you to think about as we are going to walk through these four quadrants, is think about the things that you put a lot of effort in and you're not getting a lot out. So how much sort of output are you getting from the amount of work it takes? Okay. So incompetence is that first one. One of the analogies I use in my workshop that I've done on finding your genius is using Neo from The Matrix. So incompetence might be getting to work on time, right? You have that scene in the beginning where he oversleeps, he didn't wake up, he didn't set his alarm, and you know, apparently it's been an issue before because his boss kind of talks to him about it, right? So structure, order, getting places on time, that is an area of incompetence for him. This is a tough area to own. Right. So anybody who subscribes to the idea of like a quote growth mindset will have a very hard time just accepting or being at peace with the fact that there are certain things that you just actually don't do well. Right. If you're like me, I'm 40 and I was in the generation where our parents told us we could do anything. And that's probably still true today. I certainly don't tell my kids that, but I'm sure, you know, maybe that's still happening. is this thing we tell kids of you can do anything. And we think that that's empowering, but it's not. It's actually very, very stifling for kids. It's actually very stifling for us as adults because we slap up against reality and go, but wait a minute, but there are all these things that actually I don't do well and that I don't enjoy doing. And so if you're telling me I can do anything, then that means something's really wrong with me, that there are these things that are in that sphere of incompetence. Okay. So the bottom line is, it is okay that there are certain things you do not do well. It is okay to just accept that there are things in your sphere of incompetence. Okay. And to clarify, I'm not talking about learned skills. So I don't know how to use Photoshop, or I don't know how to write C++, right? That's not what I'm talking about. We are not talking about learned skills and competencies. I don't speak Swahili, and so that's an area of incompetence for me. No, it would be more like I don't learn languages well, right? Or speaking in front of a group of people might be an area of incompetence, right? So all of these things, I am a big fan of growth and a growth mindset to some degree. What I mean to say is that growth mindset can often turn into I can do anything well. But the problem is you can't create your genius. Okay. And that's what's frustrating about it is if you want to be in control of what your genius is and you want to control your creativity and say, I want it to go here and I want it to go there, that is the best way to throw water on the fire, so to speak. Okay. So just to clarify, we're not talking about learned skills and competencies. We're talking more fundamentally, kind of about natural skills and talents here. The next sphere is the sphere of competence. You do this as well as most people. Okay. So think about like when Neo is at his desk writing software, right? He does this about as well as most people. He's kind of just humming along. He does these things about as well as most people, but he doesn't love them. He doesn't hate them maybe, but he just, you know, just kind of like the government work of life. So these are things that you do as well as most people. But let's get to excellence. Okay. So this is kind of like when Neo, you remember that scene when he's trying to fight Morpheus? He's kind of learning his martial arts. There he is in his sphere of excellence. I want to spend a little bit more time on this sphere because, again, I think we get trapped here. A lot of people do. So when he is in this sphere, he is good at what he's doing, right? He's a good fighter. He's good at martial arts. What you also notice is he is expending an extraordinary amount of work to get there, right? He is working hard. He's huffing and puffing. Whereas Morpheus, you see, he's barely even breathing. Okay. So that's one thing you're going to notice when you're in your sphere of excellence is you're going to do something really well, but it's also going to take a big toll on you. It's going to feel like a lot of work. And in some ways, that's why a lot of us get stuck there. Because if you're like me, you love the feeling of working hard. Okay. It's not like you love producing a lot. You actually love the feeling of working hard. It feels like, feels good, feels like I'm accomplishing something, feels like whatever, feels like you're alive. So excellence, you have this combination of this feeling of hard work, but you get rewarded for it. We get promoted for our excellence. We love, we get accolades. We get all kinds of recognition for our excellence. And that is another reason we get trapped there. Because we enjoy being praised. We enjoy getting affirmed for what we do well. The other thing that keeps us stuck in excellence is we can turn it on and off. Okay. We can turn on things that we're really excellent at and turn it off. It's like a faucet. Okay. We are in control of our excellence. But the fundamental thing that, taking a step back, that unites incompetence, competence, and excellence, all three, is they are all playing it safe. They are all stepping out of the realm of what we love to do into something else, into the realm of things we don't really love to do. So as we take a step back, as we're looking at these, the sort of four spheres of competence, I want you to ask yourself a few questions. Thinking about your week, let's say, or the past, you know, few days, like what are the things you've done that you love to do and the things that you didn't really love doing? And don't get caught up in like whether you, quote, have to do that or whether those things I do are, quote, like unrealistic to not do. I want you to step out of the realm of what's realistic and, well, of course you have to do this and you can't do that. Like, just forget about all that for a bit. What are the things this past week that you've really loved to do? And what are the things you haven't loved to do? If you have a full-time job, what about your job did you really love to do most? That's one of Gay Hendricks' favorite questions, is to go, I wonder what I love to do most. Okay. So we start from a place of wonder. Wonder is a great place to start to explore the difference between genius and these other sort of spheres of competence, is because when we wonder, we kind of enter into this place of openness. We step out of the realm of what we need to do or making something happen or figuring something out. And you just kind of open yourself up to, I wonder what. Okay. So those are the first three spheres of competence. Incompetence, competence, and excellence, okay? And then the last sphere is your sphere of genius. Okay, now, as we step into genius, I want you to remember, go back to when you last saw The Matrix, who knows when that was. Think about the difference between pre-resurrection Neo and post-resurrection Neo. That is the difference between excellence, competence, incompetence, and genius. Like, Neo is a different person after that resurrection. He is, like, he's the same guy, right? But his sense of flow, his sense of self, his sense of his connection to his abilities is from another, is like in another world. Right, the ease with which he moves throughout the world. Remember when he just sort of stops the bullets and they all fall, and then Agent Smith comes and tries to fight him, and he's like barely even looking. He's not expending any energy to block and move and knock him over and all these things. He is a transformed human. Okay, so how do we get there? Well, let's start by examining five different questions that I want to ask you to help you discover your genius. And this is going to be easier if you have something to write with. You can actually sort of write these down, but just think about them regardless, okay? So the first question to ask yourself to help start to uncover your genius is, when I'm blank, it doesn't seem like work at all, like teaching something I've learned to others. When I'm teaching something I've learned to others, it doesn't seem like work at all. Yeah, that's the first question. Next is to look back at your childhood. Okay, one of the reasons we do that is childhood is just this time for many of us where at least we have some memories of uninhibited wonder and being in a dreamlike state, right? My wife and I, especially my wife, is very into Waldorf and the Waldorf teaching philosophy. And one of the reasons why in Waldorf, you focus so much in those early years, those elementary and kindergarten years, on storytelling, on crafts, on play, on all these things. And you don't focus as much on learning to read and learning numbers and learning all these sort of abstract concepts. Is you're in a dreamlike state and you want to preserve and grow that dreamlike state in a child. So the next question is, ever since I was a child, I've loved to blank. Like, I've loved to make up stories. So for me, when I was a child, I would always play pretend. I would always, pretend to be some superhero that had powers. And I would, you know, have imaginative role-playing games with my friends. That was something I did a lot. I wrote down a lot of stories, but the role-playing thing was always a huge thing. I remember I would sit watching the X-Men cartoon and pretend that I was Wolverine as I was watching the show. And so as an adult, not surprising to me that I love fantasy stories. I love playing Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, Dungeons and Dragons is basically adult role playing. It's all it is, right? So that's your next question. What is it? Ever since I was a child, I've loved to blank. Okay. All right. The next question is, in my work, I get the best results when I'm blank. Like when I'm brainstorming ideas with others. So here you're looking at the output of your work. Like what actually gets you the best results? What is the thing that actually gives you an output that feels generous, that feels good, that you feel the most happy with? See, one of the really interesting things about the spheres of excellence, competence, and incompetence is as you start to go down, you get less out, even though you're putting a lot in. So you get a diminishing rate of returns in that sphere. And so that's, again, one of the ways, like we said, you can know what sort of belongs in which sphere is what are the results you get? You know, what are the results you get out of certain types of work? Okay. And when you think about results, what are the things I like to think about is, again, what are those, where do you find the most creative output? So for me, brainstorming ideas with others is actually part of my genius. I love, like, when I'm with a group of people and we're talking about ideas, ways to solve problems, people are chipping in and I'm kind of helping collate all the ideas. I feel, yeah, time sort of disappears. We get so much done. That is definitely an area of genius for me. Okay, so that was question three. In my work, I get the best results when I'm blank. Question four is, my close friends and coworkers tell me a unique ability I have is blank. Like the ability to think of my feet. So one exercise that I did with my coach with the Conscious Leadership Group is you do this kind of crowdsourcing with the people who know and love you best. So what you can do is you compose a very short email comprised of 20 to 30 people that know you from a variety of circumstances in your personal life, in your community, in your work, in your family, whatever, and ask them, you know, when I'm at my best, what am I doing? How would you describe what I do best? And you kind of see what comes back. For me, I found that the ability to think outside the box, to come up with creative solutions to problems, presenting and storytelling, communicating has always been a big, big thing that came back for me. So that's your next question is, close friends and coworkers tell me a unique ability I have is blank. So think about doing that. Think about comprising that list of 20 to 30 people, sending them an email and asking them for their feedback. And see what comes back. Then the last question to help you discover your genius is, when I'm working, time seems to just disappear when I'm blank. Like when I'm collaborating with one or two people. Okay. So where is, again, we said this a couple times, where is that state of flow? Like this is flow, right? So for me, again, when I work with my coach, the group and the team thing was doing things in groups was very much a part of my genius. She's like, just so you know, this is not everybody. This is not necessarily what everybody would say, right? Some people, she's like, some of my clients, this was, I'm alone in the woods, like writing poetry or painting. Like that is the place where time disappears, right? Not me. That's not me. Okay. So those are some questions I want you to think about. The other exercise you can do is, if you actually answer those questions and you wrote them down, you can kind of basically pick phrases from all of those five questions and put them together in some kind of introduction for yourself. Again, this is an exercise we did with the Hendrix is you take phrases from all those five questions and you make a unique introduction of yourself, combining the most interesting phrases from what you wrote. Okay. The thing they ask you to do is then you have to use, they say, commit to introducing yourself that way, like three or four times. That's something you can do. So that's a little scary. And they said only one of them can be your pet. Okay. So let's take a step back. We've looked at one, this overall idea of genius and why it is so crucial for your life to become a story, because part of what happens when you get out of Act One is this unique thing inside of you, this character that wants to come alive, has a special creative ability, this unique thing that is part of them that needs to come alive for that story to start to unfold. We looked at the sort of zones of competence, the zones of incompetence, competence, and excellence, and how those are so different from your genius. We talked about the ways you get stuck in some of those zones, get stuck in the zone of excellence. And then we talked about some questions to help you think about genius. Now, all this information is great, but the thing that will keep you from truly discovering your genius is going to be those hangups, those things that anybody who's done this work with people knows are blockers for discovering that genius. Okay. We talked about upper limits a long time ago. I would definitely encourage you to go back, listen to the upper limits episode, because this is, so we want to talk about some upper limits for genius. Okay. An upper limit, if you didn't listen to it, is our ways that we deliberately put a ceiling on the amount of goodness we are willing to enjoy or invite into our lives. We put a limit on how much love, how much intimacy, how much goodness, how much success, how much abundance we are open to having in our lives. And when we hit that ceiling, we'll start to sabotage ourselves to confirm the subconscious beliefs we have about how much goodness we're allowed to have. Genius is certainly one of those because it's very tied into ourself and our abilities. One of the things I think we learned very early on is that one of the most unpopular characteristics someone can have is arrogance, right? When we're arrogant, when we're puffed up, when we think we're great, people hate us. Right? People sniff that out. People are like, whoa, this dude's pompous. This is not, we learned that. I learned that a lot. We also learned that it can be very dangerous to be arrogant, because what if something happens that pops that balloon, you know, and our confidence gets shattered? It's very dangerous if for our egos, right? So one of the upper limits is this belief that if I truly enjoy my genius, everybody will hate me. Right? And many cultures have phrases like this. So there's a Japanese phrase of the tallest blade of grass is the first one to get cut by the scythe, or the first one the lawnmower will mow over. In English, we have phrases like keep your head down, don't stick your neck out, right? There's a phrase that the nail that sticks out gets hammered down, right? It's this belief that if you expand and grow, there's going to be someone to mow you down. But if you underachieve, then everybody will just leave you alone. And that's why genius is risky, right? That's why being in your genius is actually, or feels risky, I should say. So that's the first upper limit, I would say, is this subconscious belief of, if I truly step into my genius, everyone will hate me, I will get cut down, okay? The other one is, I can't step into my true genius without abandoning all of the systems and relationships and communities that I depend on right now and that have been a part of my life. Okay. So I came from a very religious background, and one of the things that was very prominent in that religious background, this is evangelical, was that everybody's supposed to believe you're bad and sinful. And if you don't believe that, you're arrogant. And so there would always be this kind of subconscious, unspoken competition of who can believe that they're the worst. Kind of like anytime somebody would kind of say something really disparaging about themselves, that would be viewed as humble. And let me just say, there's absolutely nothing humble about that. There's absolutely nothing good or humble about assumed self-degradation. Right. So evangelicalism, as I grew up with it, very much glorified a martyr sort of mentality. And so so for me to step out of that and to step into, to really identify with what is my genius, like who am I and how can I step into that more fully? The fear was, well, how can I do that without kind of betraying the communities and the relationships and the systems that I've depended on, right? Like if I truly step into my own genius, then again, like this sort of ties into the first one, everyone will hate me. And that means you will be ostracized. So that's another thing. So that's another common upper limit. This is something the Hendricks talk about. These are common upper limits we have to our genius. Another one, if I step into my genius, I will be an even bigger burden than I am right now. This, again, has very much roots in childhood. Gay Hendricks talked about this where he, before he was writing his books, like he, this was a big barrier for him, is this feeling of his success was resented by his siblings. And actually, him being more successful might be a burden to his family. It sounds weird when you say it out loud, but it is how a lot of us feel. And I see this all the time, is this feeling of, it's almost a form of survivor guilt. So I had this like growing up a bit, right? Like I was like the successful classical musician. You know, I got awards and I got recognition. I got all those things, but there was some of me, part of me that felt like that was a huge burden to my family, to my sisters in particularly, right? That somehow my success was putting them down, right? And so there was a survival guilt there. And a lot of us can have that, is this feeling that if we succeed, it's going to come at the expense of someone else. So is that you, right? Do you have some kind of survivor guilt? Are you trying to protect somebody else's ego by staying small, right? All right, so as we wrap up today with this next installment of how your life becomes a story of your genius, I want to leave you with a quote. Because again, I think all this information is great, but the thing that will keep you from truly stepping into your genius is not lack of information, it is barriers, upper limits, subconscious beliefs that we have so deeply rooted inside of ourselves that we don't even know are there and that we're unwilling to let go of. So you may have heard this quote. This is a quote from Marianne Williamson, A Return to Love, Reflections on the Principles of A Course in Miracles. She says this, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We are born to make," and again, if you don't believe in God, that's fine. Like substitute whatever she says about God for like the divine or just ultimate goodness, like whatever, like don't let that be a hangup. It's about something different, I think. "We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us, the glory of that divine thing in us. It is not just some of us, it's everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others." So, where are you today? Where are you today in your relationship with yourself and your own genius? Are you shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you? Are you trying to keep yourself small so that others won't reject you and so that you won't betray the systems and beliefs and communities you've grown up with? As we wrap up this episode, I want to just encourage you to take a risk. Find a small way to step into that genius, to step into the thing that you love to do most and see what happens. Because I believe that as you do that, as Marianne Williamson says, when you're liberated from your own fear, your presence automatically liberates others. I'm Jesse Livingston, and I'll see you next time.